Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On this edition of Profiles, we're out of this world. Number one, we'll talk to Buzz Aldrin, who joined us in 1996 to discuss being among the first two people on planet Earth to step on the moon. Of course, that was 50 years ago this week. Also this week, an interview with the late Colonel Bill Pogue, who joined us in 2011. He spent 84 days in space on Skylab in 1973 and 1974, but he was also part of the support crew for Apollo 11 50 years ago. This edition of Profiles, we go above and beyond.
Welcome to Profiles, from entertainers to athletes, political leaders to entrepreneurs. Profiles gives you an insight into what has made these unique personalities who and what they are today. Now, Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Buzz Aldrin, thanks for joining us on KMOX. When you stepped on the moon, you became part of a very, very elite group.
There are 24 people that left the Earth and reached the vicinity of the moon, and half of us walked on the moon. And I think it's a unique group, and I'm encouraging us to get together in some kind of a reunion of sorts just for our own social benefit.
Where would you hold that reunion, here on Earth?
I think so, yes. It's the travel agencies might be a little more inclined to find some nice place away from things.
When July the 20th comes and goes every year, do you commemorate it in any way? Or as the years move on, and after all, it's almost been 30 years now since you walked on the moon, does that day tend to come and go unnoticed?
Not at all. No, it's up to now, it's been the focal point of what we call Space Week. And I think there's going to be a modification of Space Week to bring it during the school year so we can reach a lot more people. But I'm sure that the time of the Apollo 11 mission of July 16 to 24, centered around July 20th, will continue to be something that will be observed, even if we're calling Space Week sometime in March, when we can, you know, commemorate that so that all the people in school, all the youngsters, can focus on space achievements.
Did you see the movie Independence Day?
Yes, of course I did. Probably it was opening day. I was up in Sun Valley. We were doing some things up there. Bruce Willis has some very interesting nightclubs and rock places in Haley, which is close to Sun Valley, where I spend some time. So we sold a lot of books up there.
So are you saying that you and Bruce Willis hang out at nightclubs together?
Well, actually, I go to Planet Hollywood quite frequently in most all of the major cities. So actually, we started out in London with a publisher over there. Went to a Planet Hollywood. They have a wonderful way of attracting people. They have their own public relations. So they bring in a bookstore, and it's really wonderful for the bookstore, too, because they draw attention to the bookstore. Then we may go there and do something a little bit later on.
Well, that movie, Independence Day, starts with the commemorative plaque that you left behind, right?
That's right, yes.
Did it look like that, and did you leave it in that condition? Did you think
no.
that? Okay.
the plaque was on the front landing gear leg, and it was right in the middle of the ladder coming down, and there wasn't anything that was going to put it loosely into the dust on the lunar surface. So that was a dramatic license, and it was also showing the flag still standing because I've observed that people are disturbed somehow when they learn that when we lifted off, the exhaust from the rocket blew the flag over. And, after a while, when I keep hearing things and it sinks in, it begins to tell me something. And I think it tells me that a lot of people are disturbed when the flag is on the ground. They don't really like to see that symbol. And, I'm proud to feel that way, that But when you lift off with a rocket, a rather flimsy flag is going to blow over.
We'll have to go back up there sometime and plan another one. That there is talk about a permanent lunar community. And I don't know if that's a dream that will become a reality. You have a better information about that than I do, certainly.
Well, there has been off and on proposals to return to the moon. I frankly think that Mars is a much more hospitable place to look toward as establishing a settlement that grows in a permanent way. And I really don't think we ought to entertain sending expeditions to Mars unless we're willing to make that commitment to permanence. And I think we should do that not because of the rocks or the dust or the science that we will learn at Mars, but because of the spirit that will be enhanced of people back here on Earth knowing that they now have a settlement somewhere that will preserve the survival of the human species in the event the Earth blows up or anything else happens. But besides that, it will be a focal point for the next 15, 20 years for us to focus our attention on the future. So much of what we do today is short-term focus. What's in it for me? Respond to this, buy this. The polls say this. Hurry up and do this. Hurry up and do that. We're a self-centered, immediate-oriented society. And this country is even more so than other places in the world. We're not investing in our future. And I think we need an objective to focus interdisciplinary concerns for human betterment, for the betterment of life species.
Are you talking about educating youngsters in science, or do you have other ideas in mind?
Well, if there is a growing movement that is accepted worldwide that there's going to be a settlement on Mars and that the industries, the agencies here on Earth that contribute to our livelihood, our entertainment, our well-being, our leisure, our nourishment, our health, if all of those agencies that are working on the betterment of the quality of life here focus some of their efforts on establishing a settlement off Earth, this will focus the attention on 5, 10, 15, 20 years in the future. It will get us away from this concern with the immediate right now. We'll be thinking about children doing something in the future. Specifically, this will get us out of this focus. Yes, it'll be science. It'll be all those things that go along with sustaining a settlement of Earthlings elsewhere.
Where were you? Well, let me ask you this. This voice should sound very familiar to you.
We are country of explorers. We always have been. I just think it's part of our heritage, and more fundamental than that, it's just somehow in our genes to satisfy our curiosity to know what's up there and out there.
That's Michael Collins.
Couldn't agree with him more. I'm trying to put a little focus on it. What are the benefits? And the benefits are that we have a better society that is more responsibly thinking about the future and not just our own self-satisfaction right now. Explorers are motivated by thinking about what may follow, what they may uncover, and what they may help humanity by discovering. And my focus of attention has been, how can we have a better space program, one that's responsible, one that's affordable, and one that in the near future will be taking citizens up for rides, not just the affluent, but the man in the street through innovative marketing, lottery-like opportunities for people to invest a small amount, take a chance, and let random selection determine who may be the fortunate people to ride in space, to go visit a launch, to go to space camp, to have a conversation with an astronaut, to all do thousands of space-related things. And we don't want somebody tearing up their ticket if they lose. We want to hold on to these people. And you do that by having them have a share in the future. That's why I call this, and my book, Encounter with Tiber, calls it also, Share Space Global. It's not just for America. It's globally.
Now, this is a book of fiction that you have written, Encounter with Tiber, and we're going to talk about that as we continue. Arthur Clarke has called it a classic, and we're going to, and he should know, I would think, the author of 2001, A Space Odyssey. We're going to invite our listeners to join us today at the following numbers, 436-7900, and then again, 800-925-1120. A chance to speak with Buzz Aldrin. I think this is a great opportunity, and we're glad to present it for you. If you're listening to KMOX, give us a call at 436-7900 and 800-925-1120.
Of course, this is a 1996 interview with Buzz Aldrin conducted here on KMOX. So don't call today, but we will get back to those phone calls in just a moment on this edition of Profiles.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
All right, Buzz Aldrin, where were you and what were you thinking when you first heard those words?
I was far away, in faraway places. I was maybe about 10 or 15 feet above the lunar surface, standing in the Lunar Module Eagle, looking out the window, making sure the camera was pointed on my traveling companion, Neil Armstrong, and hoping that the television camera was also sending back a real live signal to everyone back here on Earth. It was crude. I mean, it was a black and white signal. I hate to say that. And we looked like ghost figures when later I joined Neil on the surface and I started prancing around to show how easy it was to move on the lunar surface.
Many great men of science have written fiction, and you're just the latest. You've written Encounter with Tiber, along with John Barnes, who has a pretty decent reputation of his own.
You bet he does.
Writing science fiction. Well, explain to our audience, Encounter with Tiber.
The ideas first came to me over 20 years ago, after I had written an autobiography, and it had been played on TV by Cliff Robertson. I could see that you could get messages across to people very nicely with movies. Sometimes you had to write a book first, so I investigated the possibility of doing that with some very talented people in the next several years. What I wanted to do was to not talk about lunar landings or Mars. Then I wanted to talk about travel between stars and how vast the distances were and how in general we tend to minimize that and think it's a lot easier. And perhaps television series, Star Trek and others have led us to believe that if you want to go somewhere in space, maybe you can find a wormhole in space, or maybe you can go enter a black hole and come out the other end. Well, that's fantasy. That's not going to happen. Let's look at the realities of the earliest human travel to the nearest star. What might that be like? Would we go if it was going to take us 200 years to get there? No, I don't think we would. We might go there if it would take us 40 years. So somebody who's young could go and maybe come back again. The older people who go might have to stay when they get to the destination. So this is the setting that I wanted to explain to people, how detached they would be from the place from which they came or went.
So if you were traveling in a modern spaceship with today's capabilities, how long would it take you to travel from here to the nearest star?
Oh, my wife is going to love you. She loves that question to explain exactly the way you have phrased it. If you were traveling the fastest that we traveled in going to the moon, you wouldn't even come close to getting to Alpha Centauri for thousands and thousands and 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 years. So you wouldn't even think about going. The closest star is 4.3 light years away. And the moon is 1 second. Now think how many seconds there are in 4 years.
Well, that's about exactly the amount of time it'll take you to get from Clayton to downtown right now, because 40 eastbound at the Science Center, we've got a problem with ladders in the road. Ladders in the road, 40 eastbound. It could take just about as much time to get from, let's say, Clayton to downtown St. Louis as it might take for us to go from here to Alpha Centauri, which is a planet, is it not?
No, Alpha Centauri,
that's a star?
Is the closest star to
that's
us.
A star.
It's a star that's very much like our own sun. It's a double star, really, two stars going around each other in 80 years. And that's a very key issue in the story that I've built because Tiber is a moon around a large planet at Alpha Centauri A, the better star, the star that's more like our sun.
We had Mark Goddard on the program 2 weeks ago. He played Major West on Lost in Space. They never got to Alpha Centauri.
I'm not sure what they were looking for. We're not apt to get lost in space. I hope people get lost in the enticing, thought-provoking scenarios that John Barnes and I have created.
The book is called Encounter with Tiber. It's available at bookstores. It'll be signed today at the St. Louis Science Center by its co-author, Buzz Aldrin. Hello to Joe in Swansea, Illinois. You're on KMOX.
Well, good morning, Charles, and hello to Buzz Aldrin.
Good morning.
Excuse me. I'd like to know if you saw the movie Independence Day and what you thought about it.
Yes, I did. I saw it probably the day it opened, or at least one day after that, and I was impressed with the wonderful marketing that they've done on that movie. I think the special effects were sensational, very professionally done, very graphically, and I mean, they really create traumatic situations. The portrayal of the reaction of the Earth to the news that indeed an intelligent species is in our vicinity and is threatening us, and there's no doubt about it, that is reasonably well portrayed. What I really don't care for too much is this continued support of the UFO people by trying to make us believe that in 1947 aliens visited here, and in some place like Area 51, we're still looking at alien corpses, and we're investigating UFO phenomena. What we're doing in areas like that is we're providing for the common defense, which the Constitution says we should do. We're protecting our citizens against terrorists by developing defenses for this nation against individual terrorism and against national terrorism. And it's called national defense. It's called security. And we don't want to open doors and let everyone know what we're doing. But we certainly are not stashing away aliens that that came here in 1947.
Do you believe that there could be intelligent life out there in the universe?
I entertain the high probability that we're not alone in the universe. I appreciate the vast distances that are involved. Life elsewhere may be 1,000 light years away. The probability that it's as close as I have said it is in my story is pretty darn low. It really is. Belief is a word that as soon as you say, I believe this, now you have to defend that. You have to come up against anyone who says, oh, I don't believe that. You prove it to me. Well, you can't prove things, so you don't believe them. I don't think. I entertain with an open mind a lot of possibilities. One of them, strong one, is that there's some life out there. But the probability is it's a long ways away. But it makes a fascinating story that's thought-provoking, that helps us educate ourselves as to what may be our responsibilities here on Earth for preserving the survival of the human species by establishing settlements elsewhere.
Let's say hello to Ruth in Belle Fountain Neighbors. Hello, Ruth. You're on KMOX with Buzz Aldrin.
Well, I would like to say hi to you, Buzz.
Hi.
It's sure good to hear you. You just answered a question that I was pondering over.
Real quickly, because we've got to go to an Olympic update at the 46 minutes after.
Yes, sir. Well, I was just wondering if you believe that, like a lot of people say, they were captured by them, and they were strange-looking people, but nobody seems to believe them. They think they were having...
Now we're going back to Roswell, New Mexico. Americans have been captured by alien life?
I don't believe any of that. I would recommend that you read Carl Sagan's recent book, A Demon-Haunted World, and listen to what he says about mythology and witchcraft and Satanism and our obsession with all of these bizarre claims.
The words of Buzz Aldrin, who was one of the first two human beings to walk on the moon and did that 50 years ago this week. He joined us on KMOX in 1996 to discuss his book, Encounter with Tiber. In a moment, Colonel Bill Pogue, who spent 84 days in Skylab, 1973 and 1974. Astronaut Bill Pogue, as you heard him on KMOX.
That's next on Profiles.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Bill Pogue was one of 19 astronauts selected by NASA for the Apollo 11 program in April of 1966. In fact, he served as a member of the support crew for Apollo 7, 11, and 14. He also spent 84 days in the Skylab. I asked him when he joined us in August of 2011 if he thought that human beings would continue with space travel.
Well, we will do that. Right now, Bert Rutan and his group out in California are putting together a vehicle, but it doesn't go into orbit. It takes people up to space, and then they come back right back down. But we have lost our launch capability as far as anything to carry people. We don't have anything right. Well, we had, of course, the Constellation program, and we had the boosters and then the spacecraft sort of in work, but those have gone by the way.
Well, do you think that's a great loss for the United States, or how would you characterize it?
I would characterize it as going from preeminence to obscurity.
Which is not the direction we want to go into, in your opinion.
That's correct.
Yeah. What are we losing by not sending humans into space through the United States Space Program?
Well, of course, it's always a challenge to the technology of the country and the people, the scientists and the technologists. Yeah, it provides them with a lot of fodder. Now, we still have unmanned program operating now, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, but they are also cutting that back. So that, of course, that's unmanned. As far as manned and being launched from the U.S., it's going to be quite a while before we do that because we just don't have the launch capability.
Of course, every experience has an effect on our life, but some say that being in outer space can affect your life, your attitudes, the way you look at the world. Was that true in your case?
Yes, indeed. When you look down at the Earth from up there, you feel very privileged to have that sort of perspective on the Earth. But it also, it's sort of unreal in a way because of, this is just something that people don't do every day. But I enjoyed the time I was up there. We worked hard, but the last half of our flight was very pleasant. We settled differences with mission control about 6 weeks after launch, and after that it was smooth sailing.
What was your work when you were in Skylab?
We had three major areas of investigation. We had a solar observatory for studying the sun, six telescopes. We could actually image the sun in ultraviolet and X-ray, which had never been done before. And that gave us a whole new look at the operation of the sun, how it works. The second major area of investigation was the Earth. And we had a number of different instruments of conventional film cameras. We had scanners. We had radar instruments to study the surface of the ocean mainly. And then the third major area of investigation was us. This was our first experience with long stays in space. And we actually, on our flight, did the first full set of biometric measurements. That is the limb volume. We had tape measures. It was very low tech, but it gave us information we had never had before. After we had taken all the measurements, they were all in metric, so we didn't pay too much attention to them. Huh. And we were, you know, measuring body height and waist measurement and so forth. And they called us about 3 days later and says, "Hey, you guys have gotten 2 inches taller." And I said, "Well, that explains one thing. It made it really—it was very hard to get the suits on because they were custom fitted at Dover, Delaware, here on Earth. So we were actually our torso was 2 inches longer than the torso of the suit, so it was not too comfortable. Sometime once you got it fully pressurized, it wasn't so bad."
How interesting! And how did you get to Skylab?
We got to Skylab on a Saturn 1B. That was a small Saturn, and that was totally adequate for what we were doing. In fact, Skylab itself, the main structure, was the third stage of a Saturn V that lifted it off. And it was all, of course, modified with partitions and so forth, and made comfortable for human beings. We had private sleep compartments for the first time in space. We had a commode that worked very well for the first time, and so we and the food that we had was specially prepared. It was, we had food freezers, and the food on Skylab is pretty well recognized as being the best fodder that the astronauts have ever had on a space flight.
And you're in Arkansas now, correct?
That's correct.
Retired largely from space work?
Well, not exactly. I go down to the Kennedy Space Center periodically and do programs at the visitor complex, but that's not for NASA. That is for a private organization that manages the visitor complex, Delaware North Companies. And anyway, that keeps me sort of in the loop. And I do a lot of speaking around here and there.
I might be wrong, but I believe Delaware North operates the concessions at Busch Stadium. But
they have all kinds. They have national parks and everything.
Huh.
One I can't remember the name of right now. One of the big ones out in California is managed by them.
And how are we doing now in terms of funding the space program as a nation? Are we where we used to be, or are we at a lower level?
Well, it's dropping precipitously. We had at one time in the mid 60s, we had almost 2% of the federal budget, and this really made congressmen antsy. And but at the same time, they held together long enough for us to do the Apollo missions, and so the problem right now is it's about one-half, 1% of the federal budget, but that's about $15 billion, so that's still a lot of money. However, if you started to start up the program again, you can expect to spend a lot of money.
I guess so. Well, we'll take some phone calls from listeners if you have the time to answer them, or must you go?
No, I'll try to answer them.
Of course, we're not taking your phone calls. This is a repeat broadcast with Bill Pogue, the NASA astronaut who spent 84 days, almost 3 months, in Skylab and joined us for an interview in 2011. He wrote his autobiography, but for the grace of God, he died in 2014. We'll come back with part two of our interview with the late astronaut, Bill Pogue. That's next on KMOX.
Now back to Profiles on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Hey everybody, this is Charlie Brennan, and today we are going back to the archives for this edition of Profiles to listen once again to our interview with Colonel Bill Pogue, retired Air Force colonel who was also a NASA astronaut. He was part of the support team for Apollo 7, 11, and 14, but he also spent 84 days, almost 3 months, in the Skylab. And in 2011, he joined us several times, including once as our Fontbonne University Charlie Brennan Show Book of the Month Club author, when we appeared at the Missouri Athletic Club. Also on that bill was a young author by the name of Eric Greitens, who had been a Rhodes Scholar and a Navy SEAL. So here we are 50 years after man first walked on the moon, and we asked Colonel Bill Pogue back in the 1960s if he worked with a St. Louis company by the name of McDonnell Douglas.
Well, yes, they built a part of the Skylab. And so we made trips there, not frequently, but periodically, just to check on everything.
Did you ever meet old man McDonnell?
No, I never did meet Mr. Mack. He was a very colorful character from all I can hear. Well, several of the astronauts knew him pretty well, like Pete Conrad did.
Yeah.
And told us some really neat stories about Mr. Mack.
I wish I had met him. He actually was on, he started his business this week, 1931 or something, with $165,000 from friends and family, and then grew it into one of the biggest corporations in America, based right here in St. Louis. Let's get some of these calls in, including Brad, who's been waiting no less than 23 minutes to get on the line. Hello, Brad.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I've got a question. You know, he wants to put it all towards highways. What about the sewer system with MSP and the lawsuit they just settled?
Oh, okay. The caller, Bill, Colonel Pogue, is suggesting that we put money into the nation's sewer infrastructure. And to tell you the truth, it's hard to argue with that, isn't it?
Well, yeah, especially if you have to use the, if you're going up into space, you need some good facilities.
And here on Earth as well. Anne Marie, Anna Marie, you're on KMOX.
Hi, this is Anna Marie. Colonel, thank you for coming out to speak for us because you have inspired people like my daughter. She's a hometown girl who is working mission control for this mission. Notre Dame grad and St. Louis U grad. But my comment is more along the financial. You know, President Obama keeps talking about job creations and putting money into our systems. And how many high-tech jobs has he dumped with a budget cut in our space industry?
Thousands. People are leaving by the hundreds from the field centers of NASA right now. And some of them don't have any choice. They've been terminated. Others are leaving before it happens. I saw this happen on a small degree after the Apollo program closed down. This is back in the early 70s. And we lost all of our young Turks, the really sharp people. They all left. And so we were left with the sort of middle of the road technicians, and also, and then they started hiring new ones to get to replace the people that had left. And also, we had some people in their 50s and we had a polarized workforce at the Johnson Space Center. I don't know how it was at some of the others. I think Marshall was the same way in Alabama, but it was really a sad time, although people were working. They did have something to work on, and that was the shuttle. And they really launched into that big time. So we had that kept a lot of people busy and employed, but there still was a cutback in the workforce during that period.
Thank you for the phone call, Anna Marie. Let's go to Michael. You're next on KMOX. Michael?
Yeah, with regards to putting money into the highway system, the only reason Obama wants to do that is because generally they go to his union cronies, and instead of putting money where it needs to be, which is reducing taxes for people like me who have a small business that's less than $1 million in revenue, and I could be putting two and three more people back to work.
Well, Michael, you bring up a good point. There are two sides to that coin, no doubt about it. I generally see the advantage of spending money on highways because I think that the investment is a long-term one, and it helps all people for recreation and business. But I can understand your point of view. It's hard to argue with it. Let's go to Gil, who's next on KMOX. Hello, Gil.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I'd like to know why I was going to ask everybody there, and Bill Pogue there, why shouldn't we have people, we have moon bases? There are people living on the moon right now.
People living on the moon, Colonel?
That's a while. I guess the optimism that pervaded NASA back in the 60s and 70s has pretty well disappeared. Although there are good things to do. If we could get, we have to go back to the moon, forget Mars for the time being. But there are several things that are very useful there that we can do. And what's nice about it, you can get the experience in low gravity situations, you don't have to worry too much about getting back or whatever. You're within 3.5 days of getting home when you're on the moon. Now, Mars is entirely different because it's a 3-year mission, and some people have even suggested, I don't know if it's tongue-in-cheek or not, I hope so, that you don't come back. The first people who go to Mars probably won't come back. They'll stay there.
Wow, that's kind of a sobering thought. Let's go to Tom with about 30 seconds to go. Tom, you're on KMOX. Tom, are you there?
Purpose for a federal space program, if it were to continue. How about a space shield to protect us from large asteroids, which may be out there and have our name on them?
Colonel, a space shield to protect us against large asteroids.
That's
In fact, in 2029, the president said something about making a visit to an asteroid. Well, Mr. President, you don't have to go. It's coming toward us, and it's going to be here in 29. So this will be our first chance to really study that. That thing almost hit us the last time it came through.
Okay, Colonel, we're out of time here, but I want to remind folks that you've got a book out, but for the grace of God, perhaps you'll join us sometime here in St. Louis.
I would like to.
Okay, Colonel, let's make arrangements for that. Colonel Bill Pogue with us today on KMOX.
That was Bill Pogue, Colonel Bill Pogue, a retired Air Force aviator and test pilot and NASA astronaut, who did join us at the Missouri Athletic Club later on in August of 2011 for a live presentation in front of a studio audience to discuss his book, But for the Grace of God, an autobiography of an aviator and astronaut. He shared the bill with Eric Greitens, as it turns out, on that day. And I will say that's a very interesting read if you get your hands on that. He also wrote other books like How Do You Go to the Bathroom in Space and Space Trivia. He spent 84 days in space on the Skylab in 1973 and 1974. At that time, that was the longest stay in space for a human being at the time. Colonel Pogue died in 2014. That's it for this edition of Profiles. Thanks for joining us. I'm Charlie Brennan.
You've been listening to Profiles. If you missed any of this episode or want to hear other profiles, go to KMOX.com and click On Demand.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.